You are now listening to the Invited Podcast with Cedric Harris and Tia McClain. You've officially been invited.
You are now tuned into your favorite podcast, The Invited Podcast. And today is a super special day because we have our final guest of season two. We are joined by Darion Henderson, a two-time Emmy-nominated news anchor from St. Louis, Missouri. Darion, a member of the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity, earned his bachelor's degree in multimedia journalism from Southeastern Missouri State in 2015 and has been right in the mix of the field ever since. He is the current morning anchor for WMBF News in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and released his debut memoir, The Come Up, from How Do I to How Dare You, I love that title, in 2019. We are excited to learn more about Darion's journey, his love for travel. We know you've been a lot of places, various accolades, and just advice for people wanting to do similar work. So it is so nice to meet you. Thank you for joining us, Darion.
Thank you for having me here. I'm really excited to be here to talk with you guys and honestly just to, you know, share my journey. That's really where my book came from, is, you know, wanting to share my experience. I know we'll get to more of that later, but, you know, I'm just happy to be here to still give it back to the community that, you know, poured into me.
So, yes. Yeah, for sure. And so you just mentioned right off camera this, your 1 year anniversary in your current role and your current place. So why don't you go ahead and give the listeners a little bit of information about what your current role is as the morning anchor, and what type of stories do you cover, and kind of like what your overall role is at the station?
Yeah, so this is my actual first morning anchor role, first anchor, full-time anchor role. Like, and I say full-time anchor, because I know like the anchor reporter title kind of gets switched up in the community. You know, I've had to explain it to my mom. But this is my full time being able to sit on the desk. So I'm not outside in the cold no more. I'm sitting at the desk. You know, I ain't got to worry about those elements when it's raining. It's like, it's so bad. All right, back to the news. So I'm not out in the elements anymore. I'm actually sitting behind the desk. But that's in our industry. I mean, that's where the money at. That's number one. It's where the money at. And that's how you progress, honestly, within the industry. Like, you know, that's where majority of the people want to get to in their career is behind the desk. And it's an interesting road trying to get to that point in your career. So since you're out here, this is my first role doing that. And on the side, well, I guess not the side, but also after I get off the desk, I'm also tasked with having special reports. So immediately when I got out here, I got here last year, which was October 2020, the year that should still remain nameless. But I got a new job in that year and came out here. And around that time, the vaccine was being released. Mm-hmm. So immediately in my mind, I just got here, not even like 3 months into the job, still in my grace period job. and I was like, you know, this vaccine was coming. Like, I'm like, Black folks ain't gonna mess with this. I'm gonna tell you right now, it's just not gonna happen, yeah. You know? And I'm like, so we need to, instead of, you know, every morning I was, you know, giving a couple lines on the news, you know, Black people are hesitant, you know, all right, next story, you know, and just saying Black people are hesitant, you would think it's ignorance if you don't know what happened years in the past.
Yes.
You know, and not to go so political, but we talk about critical race theory and things of that nature, mm-hmm. and how you don't want to teach that. Well, you're not going to know it then about the Tuskegee experiment if you're not learning that in school. So since you don't know that, since we can't teach that, then here we are, you're in your adult stage, and here I am, you know, 28 at the time, year old me, is about to be telling you about exactly why we don't want to take this vaccine. So including myself, honestly. So I was very hesitant in the beginning as well, even though I already had COVID. So I pretty much got here and I started a series called Seeds of Distrust. And within that, you know, it's all about what you put out into the world and what you're going to get back. So I literally just made a cold call to this doctor here in the Myrtle Beach area. And I was like, hey, you know, he's a Black doctor, because I want to speak with somebody Black, of course. Yeah. The only way he's going to get full perspective. Come to find out, this dude literally had went to Morehouse in Atlanta. He had graduated from Morehouse and also was a recipient of a scholarship that was based off the Tuskegee experiment.
Wow. Like,
so to make sure that it didn't happen again from the White House. So literally it all just kind of just came together. Just literally just perfect. So I do that. And then also I'm a fitness guy too. You know, I love working out. So I had a huge weight loss journey. So I'm like, I ain't trying to get out here and gain them pounds back. Yeah. And I gained a few, but I just didn't want to gain too much back. So I ended up going ahead and starting that just to hold myself accountable, but also inspire the people as well. I think my fitness journey is something that a lot of people can learn from. I lost like 50 pounds right before the book release.
Wow.
So I just wanted to keep that going. And so I do that. And then I also do a segment now called Living Your Best Life, because we live in a tourist city. So it's like, you gotta wanna live your best life around here. So I show different areas around here, more holistic. Mm-hmm. That you can live your best life. So I got a lot on my plate as I sit back and talk about it. I gotta take a step back, cause you know, they get their money's worth out here.
And most of our guests often do that. Like as we're talking with them, like, I didn't even know I did all these things. But so I recently went to Myrtle Beach. I went over the summer. And so it seemed like there's some parts that are super peaceful. And then you get like on the boardwalk, it's a little bit more like touristy and party-ish.
Yep.
But overall, I feel like it was like a retirement town. But have you ever like reported on anything really wild or really crazy?
Oh, I'm from St. Louis. It stops right there. Like, honestly, like, I came from St. Louis. I was in St. Louis about roughly almost 3.5 years. So yeah, like, I mean, honestly, I won't say every day was crazy, but a lot of those days in St. Louis were wild. Like, it's like, I'm looking at stories I'm doing out there and I'm like, am I really talking about this? And honestly, sometimes stories that really just broke my heart. Like, you know, that was the first place where, and I blame it on my attachment to the city. But it's also was just a story, just as a whole. You know, some stories I ended up finished writing, voicing it so my, you know, photographer could put it together so we can get ready for the newscast. And I had to get out the car and just start crying, you know, just to let it out, because you take so much of that with you, you know. And I'll talk about, like, you know, scenes where, like, you know, a mother was killed in front of her children, you know, and I went and interviewed her mother, you know, the grandmother, and the kids are there. And it's just, it just broke my heart, you know, and it's like, you know, and I'm having to talk to, you know, my counterpart, my photographer, about everything. And like, he's like, oh, it's going to be okay. And I'm like, nah, man, it's not, you know, it's not. Yeah. Like, I gotta process this, you know. Yeah. But that also goes back to like the mental health of it all, that I think a lot of people I know, rather, that, you know, that's not really, it's not spotlighted in news. You know, we feel the thing of like the recent, you know, fake news. Mm-hmm. News and things of that nature, but like, this is real, you know, and this is real, and this is something that we see personally, you know. It really hurts us, you know. I reported on the first woman who died in St. Louis, a Black young lady, you know, and that affected me, you know, seeing her family go through that. So it just, people don't know how much we take home from this job, but I try to process to keep my mental all together.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to add really quickly that I don't feel like we think enough about that. So as you think about therapists and psychologists, of course you are thinking about how much they're taking in and that they have to take home with them. But it is the same for journalists and anchors and people who are on the scene talking to these victims of trauma.
Yeah. Because we talk to them like personally, like literally, like you're literally either talking to somebody at the best day of their lives. And a lot of people, majority of the time, at the worst day of their lives. And understand, like, just the reason why you're hearing them on TV is because I had to muster up the courage to, for one, reach out to these people at all when they just found out that their child just passed away. And for two, to tell them, hey, you mind going on TV with me to tell me about your grief? Like, it's deep, you know what I mean? It's deep. And it's sometimes I had to, like, in college, I was always considered like the finesser. And like, that's really what this industry is. Like, it's really about just trying to finesse it and not get over on people, of course, especially when someone just lost a child or their brother or their sister or anything of that nature. But, you know, try to help them understand that, you know, in order sometimes to get justice, people need to hear their grief. you know, is just in St. Louis. So many murders happen. So many happen to the point where we can't even go cover them all, you know. And I even found myself being insensitive in some points. You know, I'm out at brunch and they're like, hey, we got a this type of shooting going on or whatever. And I'm like, well, did they die? Because I'm having mimosas right now. You know what I mean? This happens every day and I'm tired. You know what I mean? So it's like, you almost come insensitive to it, but then you have to sit back and, you know, my friends would be like, did you just say that? I'm like, oh, yeah, but it happens every day though. And like, but still. So it's a lot. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, there's not a lot of resources even within the news industry, to be honest with you, which is just, it baffles me that we don't have counselors on standby to talk to, but we don't. So, but a lot of things, especially within our generation, especially right now, is being addressed. You know, we just got an email the other day saying Juneteenth is now a holiday within our company. So we're definitely progressing, which you know, but it's taking its time though. It's taking its time.
For sure. And like you said, with the limited resources, how do you yourself disconnect or decompress? Like, how do you not take your work home with you every day and just have that hanging on your heart at all times?
You have to find your methods. You know, you have to find your methods and your modes. And mine is complete, like, self-care. And one more deeper, like, unapologetic self-care. Because people around you always are not so as accepting of your self-care moments. Yeah. You know, we talk about, like, even, you know, coworkers who, you know, after working with them 5 days a week, they're like, oh, let's go out on Saturday. How about not? We're not going to do that. I need my time to reprocess. You know, I consider myself like an extrovert introvert, you know, like when I'm with you, when I'm outside, I'm outside. Let's get it, you know. But when I want to sit down on a couch, I'm sitting down on this couch and I want to be left alone. And that's it. You know, if I don't want to do anything today, I just don't want to do anything. Mm-hmm. But you find ways, honestly, to process it, you know. So literally, it comes up on some weekends where it's like, you know what? I'm sitting on the couch all weekend. And that's what the hell I do. I sit on the couch. I'm going to watch TV. Mm-hmm. If I just want to sit because I didn't found interest in like video gaming. I ain't played video gaming in years. And through the pandemic, I found some interest in it or whatever. So now I'll be on Twitch watching people play video games. And now I'm like, you know, I don't want to play anymore because they pay hella good and I'm hella bad. So it's like, I don't even want to even. It's a whole other situation, but that's what I find like my release at, you know? So I play, you know, Spider-Man video game just to kind of just disconnect, watch cartoons, watch sitcoms, you know, Parker, Sister, kind of reliving my childhood. So you just find ways. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I found my way of dealing with it. But I mean, there's still so many people in this industry who just don't have it, you know, and I'm having to help friends out and let them know, hey, like, stop scheduling stuff on Saturdays. Like, that alone, I'm telling you, that alone right there is self-care. It's self-care. People think it's like, oh, like, no, I got to schedule. No, you're like, we live our lives on a schedule Monday through Friday. At least give yourself one day besides Sunday, as we all know, going to be like, I'm sitting at home. Yeah. Give yourself Saturday too to be like, you know what? I'm going to go with the flow. And the beautiful thing about living out here in Myrtle Beach is like, sometimes I'm laying on the couch. I look up, I'm like, man, beach 5 minutes away. Let me go on here and just, you know what I mean? Put on this sunscreen, get this chocolate glistening, you know what I'm saying? And get out on this beach, you feel me? So that's one of the good things about being here in Myrtle Beach now too.
Yeah, I absolutely loved being on the beach. I was like an old person. I was out there listening to a podcast. I fell asleep on the beach. It was lovely. but I want to-
A little drink, drink.
I'm sorry.
I said, you got to have a little drink too. Oh, you know, I stopped at the liquor store.
She knows. That's all she do.
I know we PG on here. You know what I mean? I'm like, you just let me know.
Hey, we are.
No, I definitely had my little drink. That's why I fell asleep. But I'm gonna quickly like transition into college days. So let's think back to college days. Ooh. What ultimately made you choose your major? So multimedia. And then also, like, did you always know you wanted to be in front of the camera?
No.
No,
that's the simple no, nah, not at all. I had good teeth, but they were not aligned. They were not like this. I'll tell you that. So what happened was is that I actually started off school. Well, was graduating high school. I was in the Riverview Garden School District.
Okay.
And at that time, they didn't have accreditation. It was just a, it wasn't the best environment for me to learn, to be learning in. So I ended up leaving Riverview Gardens and going to North County Tech in St. Louis. That was the only kind of other way to maneuver to another school. So, excuse me, I went to North County Tech. It ended up working out 100 times better for me graduating school. But as you know, with a GPA, you get so low, it's hard to get that sucker back up. So yeah. I think I was graduated with like maybe a 2.2 or 2.3. I'm trash. Trash. So no school was honestly accepting me. I was getting rejection letters like crazy. So I'm looking around to like all my counterparts and everything of that nature, like, you know, who just happy they getting accepted into Mizzou 6 months before we graduated. And here I am. I can't get into Fluff. And that's open and road. So it was just a lot, man. So I got like an 18 on like my ACT, which still wasn't great, but it got me into at least college courses, what I found out.
Yeah.
So after going to Flow, I'm like, okay, so I got to sit here, do this test. And based on how I feel doing this test is what classes I'm going to be placed in. So I was in there doing it and I'm doing the math section. I'm like, I'm tired of doing this. So I end up, I'm like, well, it's elementary algebra. So that at least gets me in like to college algebra, right? Nah, that's remedial. So I end up stopping and realizing that that's remedial. I'm like, bro, this ain't gonna do it. So I end up going to Harris-Stowe State University in St. Louis because they were open enrollment as well. So I didn't have to worry about getting a rejection letter. And they also took ACTs, which also put me in college courses because 18 was like the literally the threshold to get you into college level courses. So I went to Harris-Stowe State University and was loving it. I like a, got like a 3.8 my first semester and ended up, I still remember this day vividly. I got braces too. So the grill was
sorry.
The grill was getting fixed. So I'm like, oh yeah, it was starting to come together. So I'm like, okay, let's get it. And then next thing you know, I was literally in my computer class and I had just the day prior, I don't know, it just went through my mind. I'm like, what about journalism? I'm like, I'm waking up every morning watching literally Fox 2 News in St. Louis. I'm like, that looked pretty cool. Like, you know, I'm getting my grill fixed. I don't think I look too bad. You know what I mean? So let me try to see what's up. So I had it in my mind. It was just in my mind. That's it. And I went to my computer class the next day and my professor, Dr. Smoot, she looked at me and I don't know what went over because I looked, I'm like, she's looking at me for. And she literally was like, what's your major? And I was like, well, you know, it was business administration. But I kind of just changed it in my head last night to I think journalism. And she was like, I can really see you doing that. I have a friend, I can't think of his name right now, but he works for Channel 5 here in St. Louis. She's like, you want to see if you want to talk to him or whatever, if I can like schedule like a talk? I'm like, sure, why not? You know, so ended up talking to him and really the rest was history. Ended up, it was between, because I wanted to stay in Missouri and I had friends down at SEMO, Southeast Missouri State University. And it was between SEMO and Mizzou. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the money really to go to Mizzou. And I'm didn't consider myself to be a Mizzou guy. So, and I was kicking it down at SEMO every chance I get, I drive down there. So I'm like, listen, they be kicking it, they down to earth and they have the same accredited program. Mm-hmm. And I got down there and it was not what I thought it was gonna be. They did not have no TV journalism. All they had was a newspaper and a radio. And it was just not what I thought it was gonna be at all. Like, and then like the professor, who was the only TV professor in the department, she ended up getting fired the next semester. Jeez. So I'm like, what is going on? My dreams are now crumbling, but I still kept the faith and still kept going, knowing that, you know, well, y'all don't have it, but you know, I finessed my way so far. Right. So I have to keep finessing it. So honestly, the rest is history. And it's what I talk about in my book too, about how I kind of take a glimpse back and take you through that moment, because I almost was a teacher for Teach for America out in Las Vegas. I had got it and everything. I had got it. Like it literally, like it got to like November, December of 2014. And I'm like, you know what? this teaching stuff is just not me. Like, you know, like I had a fraternity brother down in Memphis, went to go talk to him. And I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking about maybe doing like the teacher thing and then still trying to become a journalist on the side. You know what I mean? And he was like, yeah, bro, nah. Like kids deserve better than that. I'm like, yeah, they kind of do.
Facts.
And, you know, you're just not going to be able to do that because just, you know, what you have to do as a teacher. And then they start talking about them salaries. I'm thinking I'm going to be out in Vegas, you know, on the strip, living my best life. Not on $28,000 I wasn't. So, you know, once that became a reality, looking at how much rent costs, nope, I'm out. So I ended up just honestly praying. And I was like, you know what? If I get an internship in this industry, that means that I'm supposed to be in this industry. So I ended up just applying to everywhere in St. Louis. Fox News in St. Louis ended up giving me a call back and ended up getting the internship January of 2015. I scheduled all my spring classes to be online, did like a study abroad class for like spring break. And yeah, put it down. And February came around, Teach for America was like, we need this test, that test, that test, $250 for this, $100 for this. I'm like, nah, bro, this ain't gonna happen. I'm like, I prayed on it. So I ended up dropping Teach for America and going full force with my dream to be in TV, and actually end up getting my first job before I graduated from college back down in Cape Girardeau, SEMO, where, you know, school was at the CBS affiliate. And yeah, ever since I got that job, I haven't quote unquote looked for a job since. Everybody has come calling me. So not too shabby.
Yeah, hey, that's everybody's dream, right? Not to have to apply for jobs. For you talked about the internship. How did that prepare you for going into your career? Like, how was that experience overall? And what did you kind of take away from that to help you to where you are today?
Oh, man, like the internship was everything. I recommend internships 100%, 1,000%. And I recommend internships at places that you dream of working, you know, because it's almost easier for you to come back, yeah. You know, because you already have that insider situation. And to be honest, you know, getting like an internship at NBC, ABC, National, you know, CNN, you need to go to a school that got a name on it. You need to go to Howard. You need to be at Mizzou. You need that. Like, that's the only way you're getting in there, you know, and I didn't have that. So I realized, okay, I need to go somewhere local. So I started off local. But that was everything to me, you know, everything to me, so much so to where, when I talk about it in my book too, literally I was putting together a reel and it's horrible. I'm telling you right now, it is. I look at it and I'm like, who hired this guy? This is trash. But child, I was selling it like gold. You hear me? Like it was everything you needed on your TV at that time. And you crazy if you didn't think that you needed it. So yeah, so I just end up getting in there, learning from people, you know, keeping my head down, grinding it out, you know, staying out of like the drama of it all because I ain't got time for that. I'm here to get a job after this and potentially come back here. Make sure that everybody in that building, either you knew my name, you knew me personally, or you heard from somebody else the type of person that I am. Like, I don't care. You're going to know my name in this place. And everybody knew my name, you know, was bouncing around corners and just being the intern because I was working so hard, you know. And there were even roadblocks during my internship that I talk about in my book, you know, the internship coordinator. I told you that school didn't have TV news, right? So I'm trying to figure out how to get into, you know, TV, trying to be on camera just to get to my intern. And like my intern coordinator wouldn't let me go out with reporters to then go learn how to be in front of the camera. It was a mess. So it was like, finally, when I get to this point, y'all still holding me back. So like, this is a constant theme in my story. Yeah. Always people constantly, you know, just trying to hold back. Honestly, what's inevitable, what God already has planned for me. And, you know, God gonna take you through and push through all of that. So it was great, but there was definitely roadblocks. But I got exactly what I needed from that internship to get me to that first job. And the same woman who I showed my tape to at Fox 2, the manager showed it to her, the news director. I showed it to her and literally she was like, yeah, you're probably not gonna get a job in this industry. Yeah, straight up. Told me that. I drove home crying, could barely drive. because my eyes was just so clouded. You know, I'm on 270. Like, you say, look, you know, I'm on 270. And I'm like, man, like, this lady that told me. So, well, I didn't waste my time. I didn't switch my major. I didn't get an internship. And that same woman, I got my first job, by the way. I kept in contact with her. So I didn't take that as a grudge or anything of that nature. I used it as fuel. That same woman called me a year and a half after that moment and wanted me to come back to St. Louis. Called me to come back to St. Louis. And the first situation she was trying to hook me up with didn't work out. She called back literally the next month and was like, you know what? It was like a producer reporter position. And I'm like, no, I didn't work hard to become a reporter in this industry. I want to stay in front of the camera. Yes. And that was like November of 2016. And then she ended up calling back December, a month later, like 3 weeks later, and was like, you know what? You do deserve to be a reporter. And ended up meeting with them. My contract wasn't up until June 2017. I met with them that January, right after New Year's. And they were like, yeah, we're going to wait on you. So they waited on me until June. 2017, okay. After you just told me I wasn't gonna get a job.
Yeah. And now I look at you. Listen, God is always working, like you just
God is good, you know.
Listen. And so okay, I have a quick question about that one situation. So when this woman told you you're not gonna work in this industry, did she give you any feedback for improvement, or like how did you turn that into fuel versus let that hold you back from moving forward?
When she told me that, you know, for one, I took it to heart at that moment.
Yeah.
But through growth, through getting older in life, you start to process it and you realize she was right. But it was what I needed to hear at that moment, you know? So in that particular moment, it broke my heart, you know? And the context she gave, you know, which is, I don't hold a grudge against Mizzou people nowadays, but they were like my arch enemies back then. You know, she was like, and she was right. There's people, those students at Mizzou, they literally start being on TV while in college their junior year. So for the next, 2 years, the junior and senior year, they already have TV experience. So when it's time to then graduate and get a job, that's why Mizzou, you're definitely going to get a job because you've already been on TV. So I can still pay you the same thing I'm paying everybody else starting off, but you already have 2 years of experience. Mm-hmm. Here I am with nothing, nothing, just internship, me playing around on camera. And she was like, yeah, it's just not going to happen. Like, it's just not going to happen. So, but for me, like, it was just something deep down. You know, I went back to that prayer that I had just prayed last November, that just, you know, I literally had asked God, like, listen, if I get an internship, that means it's supposed to happen. And at this point, I'm all in, you know, in a casino. I got my last $100 on 17 and it better hit, you know what I mean? That's it. So at that point, it's like, what do you do? I can't go back to the drawing board. I can't get back up to, not TSA, I went right to TSA, but TFA.
Yeah.
I can't go back to them and say, you know, actually, you know, let me get that job back. You know what I mean? You still need a brother? You know, I don't want to go back and do that. Plus, like, the deadlines have passed. So, you know, I'm already delayed in that. So I didn't want to do that. And, you know, everything else wasn't working out. I'm literally applying for jobs that I know I was more than qualified to work for. Enterprise in St. Louis, that's where the headquarters is at. I'm still getting rejected. I'm like, Lord, what's going on now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so once you're going through that motion and I'm still getting rejected from other jobs, it's like, you know what? This is God telling me, stay the course, stay the course. So I just have to just take that as fuel, like, you know, and realize that I've been through adversity all these years prior. You got to keep going. You got to grind this out. So literally I'm up. At that time, that literally gave me the fuel. I went on my study abroad trip over to London and Paris. And when I came back, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just grind this out. I'm going to go hard. And I was literally up every morning. I knew it, had it in my mind that, of course, naturally it's people because we're all kind of processing away. People wake up, they check their email, right? Of course they do.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? I'm hitting up these news stations. I want to be the first email that you see.
Every morning.
So, you know, in the email, I'm putting, you know, reporter, quotes, available immediately. You know what I mean? Like yesterday, you know what I mean? So if anybody looking for a reporter, you're looking to fill a position, yeah. I'm your guy. I'm your guy. And I literally was sending, I was sending stuff from Maine. Lord knows I ain't want to live in no Maine. But I'm sending stuff to Maine, Wisconsin, Minnesota, like, every corner of the United States, I'm looking for jobs and sending them out there. Iowa, like I wanted my foot in, you know, and that saying about all you need is one yes, mm-hmm. That's real. That's all I got. Like even after all those jobs, nobody called me after I got my first job. Like, hey, we saw your resume. I was still getting rejection letters after I started the job. So like, nah. So my life is, I mean, you know, I guess it's a big rejection, but I don't accept that it's like truth, you know, and I found to keep going is my only way. So that was really my fuel and realizing that, you know, I had a dream and I'm not gonna let nobody deter me from that dream. You know, what's a dream deferred? Like a raisin in the sun, right?
Come yeah, on. Facts.
Mindset and perspective is everything. Yes.
Yeah.
And with that fuel, it kind of brought you back full circle, right back, like you said, to Fox News. So how was it being a
Fox 2 News?
Fox 2 News.
Fox 2 News. Fox, you
know? All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We don't want to get those two confused. Fox 2 News in St. Louis, Missouri.
Fox News did sign my checks, okay?
All right. There we go. But, like, how was it being back in your hometown, like, in front of the camera, in your hometown? And like people you know, like your family members, your friends, seeing you on TV every day. How was that whole experience?
That was surreal, surreal. And I'll be honest with you, I'm still on a high, you know? I'm still on a high from it. Really, like, you know, I know we're gonna get to the point of why you left, but I'm still on a high right now, which is an interesting story, tidbit, by the way. But honestly, I'm still on a high from it. Like it was such a surreal moment, you know, of just acceptance, of just love, of just genuine, just, you know, it was one thing seeing a black man as dark as me, because I'm darker than your dark friends. So seeing that on TV.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, when the city realized and they went to my bio and it's like, oh, he's from St. Louis, mm-hmm. You know, not only do we have a black man on this TV screen, he's from here, you know, and then you add on, I went to Harris Stowe, yeah. You know, I went to Southeast Missouri State University, you know, I crossed Alpha where a lot of my, you know, profites lived in St. Louis. So I was identifiable.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so it was past just being this face on TV, this guy in our neighborhood. You know, it was somebody that I knew was from St. Louis, and people appreciated that. They still appreciate that to this day. Yeah. I still get people, you know, I can make a post about somebody being dead out here and people hit me up on like the message, like, hey, you know, we still miss you in St. Louis. Come on back now, you're here, you know? And it's like that, but that was the love, you know, that was just the love and appreciation that I got within neighborhoods. I mean, I could go anywhere in St. Louis, you know, and I was Gucci. I was good. Like, you know, I like in any of the clubs, like anywhere, like I was just good upon a rock, still good, to be honest with you. But it was just so much love and appreciation. I'm out anywhere in the city, no matter if it's the gas station or anywhere. And it was just so much love and appreciation. And I think, you know, for me to feel it personally, it was one thing. For my family to feel it and to see it and to see, you know, Lil Darion, you know, go from just because, mind you, this was literally just, it went from Lil Darion to now Darion's on my TV because I went off to go to college. You know, I started my career off somewhere else. So they didn't get that middle age group of me, like that real growth spurt that I had. Like they missed that. Like, you know, they were there, but they weren't there, you know? So to go from just Lil Darion who just went off to college to Darion, the news reporter, who is this guy? Like, what's like, and why are you going crazy over my cousin? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just Darion. Like, what you mean, Darion? Oh my God, you know Darion? Yeah, that's my cousin. Duh. Like, you know, so it was just a surreal moment. I think even for like my mom, you know, she just loved it. She loved her son being, you know, Terry I. Henderson, you know, and just sitting around and socially talking to people just about anything. And, you know, they'll just start complimenting me. And it's like, that's my son. You know what I mean? So I think that was just a surreal moment. But like I said, just acceptance. I mean, I got literally as soon as I got there, well, at least within the first year, a Distinguished Alumni Award, the first one from North County Tech, that school district.
Yeah.
I received another one from Riverview Garden School District, my home school that I ended up leaving. I literally had a whole side hustle, making good money, doing speaking engagements, you know, hosting things. Once again, it's just that local name, that local story, that local success story. People loved it. People loved it. And then once I go into kind of, you know, what we already touched on,
yeah,
about those hurdles I have to go over, you know, you then realize that this isn't just a goddess on TV. You know, this is somebody that I can actually relate to, you know, and he's not some away. No, I don't have time. That ain't me. What right. it do? What we doing? You know what I mean? So it's like, that's how I am. That's my energy. That's my energy on TV.
Yeah.
Because I can give you a story and I can also give you that look like they lying. You hear what I'm saying? Like, just listen to what I'm telling you,
yeah.
You know, and people appreciated that because they could see, they could feel your vibe. You know, a lot of people would say that in St. Louis, like, man, like you get a real, and that's a lot because you know, the trust within the media, and especially in St. Louis, you know, it wasn't there. It's not there, to be honest with you. So for people to say, you know, you get that real, you tell the truth. Mm-hmm. That was everything to me. Because I'm giving you the truth. And I want you to know that there's somebody in here that's working for you. I have your best interests at heart. So when I would go out to these shooting scenes and things of that nature, you know, it was nothing for me to you know, inundate myself with like the family and get those exclusive interviews. Because once again, this is the local guy. I know him. Like, you know, and if I don't know him, I know his cousin. If I don't know his cousin, I know his mama. Or I know somebody of somebody, because I got so many cousins running around St. Louis that, you know, it wasn't like I was some foreign guy to them, you know?
Exactly. And thank you for naming that, how important it is to have someone that looks like you in certain spaces, you know, with a seat at the table, as people say. But yes, and hopefully more companies do begin to realize how valuable that is to have somebody who looks like their audience. But you said something that we literally cannot skate over. So you said the interesting story about why you left Fox 2 News. So let's get into that.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly, that's the first open forum that I'm talking about this on. Okay. And it's not, I guess, as juicy as I guess I probably tease it to be, but it's, I think it's still important. Is that, you know, you do get to a certain point, you know, where it's like, this is all good, this is all gravy, this is amazing, you know, I'm in St. Louis, I'm around my family, I'm happy, but I strive off growth.
Yes.
I think if anything, you can look at my story and realize that I grow along the way. I'm all about growth. So as soon as I feel as if I'm being put down a one-way street, or I'm about to hit a cul-de-sac and I got to turn back around to go the same damn way I just came.
Yeah.
I'm making a right or a left back at the stop sign. You know what I mean? Like, I'm reading a sign that says, you know, no through street. And I'm riding out and I'm hitting that left, I'm hitting that right. Like, I'm not gonna keep driving forward. Like, clearly, this is gonna just take me right back around to like the stop sign. And that's what I was getting to in St. Louis. You know, my contract came up last June and it was like, okay. And I know we're in a pandemic, I get it, but if you have no cash for me, if you don't have any growth experience for me, then you don't have Darion. Like, I'm out the door, you know. I had to also realize that, you know, people do appreciate me here in St. Louis. And that's great. You know, my family loved me here and that's amazing. But it was part of that mental health that I was telling you about, where I have to realize that I can't always be living outwardly when internally I'm not where I want to be.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, this is great. Outwardly, everything is amazing. Hell, I'm flying to St. Louis in a couple of weeks because the organization that I used to host events for wants me back for another event. So they pay for my flight to come on out and everything.
Hey.
That's much of the impact. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm like, well, it's other people in St. Louis on TV. It's like, no.
We want you.
We want you. We want you. And that just says about the impact there. So it got to that point of like my contract after 3 years there. And I'm like, you know what? There's nothing more here. There's nothing more here. And I was presented with, I'm seeing a 2-year contract. And it was like either, you know, I looked at it and I'm like, okay, what's on the other side of this 2 years?
We're now at the halfway point of this episode. Let's take a word from our sponsors.
Mm-hmm. And I saw nothing. I saw the same thing I was doing for the last three.
Yeah.
And if you're going to give me, if I'm going to sign you for another 2 years of my life, I need growth. I need something.
Yeah.
And I'm literally fighting. I had to submit a resignation letter. And like, it was a whole lot of just mess. And all I'm asking for is basic decency.
That's
and,
it.
You know, I'm not doing this because I know my worth. Because that's what's important, you know, in this, and really in just life, is knowing your worth, you know, knowing that what I bring to the table. So me knowing everything I just told y'all before, how people come up to me out on the streets, you know, how people appreciate my work and things of that nature. So I can't be in here not fulfilling what I know to be the truth within myself because I'm just so infatuated with people knowing my face on the streets. That's cool. That's gravy. But listen, I also want to buy a house one day. I also want to have a family one day. Yeah. And if I can't get to that, then like, nah. And like, I'm like, after 2 years, I'll be 30 years old. I don't know if I'm having a midlife crisis, but I don't see, like, when I hit 30, I want to be at a certain spot, you know what I mean? Or at least on that road there. And I didn't see that in St. Louis. So I had to, I'm doubling back. Like, I got to get out of there. I got to go. And that's why I end up here in Myrtle Beach. Got a call from out here. Like I said, I didn't. A lot of jobs I've applied for after I've already got it. So I got a call from them out here. I had another interview too somewhere else in like Ohio. Excuse me. And I came out here and I'm all about just natural feeling. So when I got off the plane at the airport, I'm like, yeah, this is the crib. It's home. At least for now. I'm like, this is the next step. This is the next step. I can see myself getting off this plane because I stay going somewhere. I can see myself getting off this plane and being in this airport.
Yeah.
And it was just the amount of love, you know, and appreciation. I was getting a whole lot of pushback in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. We talked about my first, you know, me being nominated for 2 Emmys. My first Emmy never even aired on TV. The only reason why that was even eligible for me to be entered is because, I finessed it again. And put it on Facebook, which makes it eligible. So, you know, even finally when I got to St. Louis, I was receiving so much pushback within my job.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and then finally get to the contract negotiations and we're talking about what's next and you ain't got nothing for me. So then what are we doing? What am I doing? It's time to go. And when God tells you it's time to go, pack your bags.
Yes.
Pack your bags. Yeah. So one of my top songs last year was I'm Upset by Drake because I was upset. You hear me? I'm telling you, I was upset.
Man,
I was playing that on loop because I was just genuinely just upset. You know, 100,000 on my head. That's just respect. Like, you know, respect. Like,
yeah.
So I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But, you know, I'm as happy as I've ever been, honestly. You know, that's what matters. No, I'm not in the biggest city. I'm not in Dallas or, ATL or Charlotte or anything of that nature, but I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And that's what matters. If anything tells you through my story, it's that at the end of the day, I've been going right along to the place that I'm supposed to. So here I am.
Know yourself, know your worth.
Yes.
Simple.
Listen, word to Drake.
And so about your worth, right? You clearly have a lot of it because like you talked about, you were nominated for 2 Emmys. So can you walk us through the stories that got you nominated and a little bit of background about that whole process?
Absolutely. It's my blood pressure had never been so high for those 2 Emmys. I'll be honest with you. So the first story was a story about an older guy. Section 107 it was. Section 107 at what used to be the Chaffetz Arena, I believe it was called.
Uh-huh.
No, I think it's like the Enterprise Center in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he was in Section 107. It was honestly just a sales email. And mind you, we get sales, marketing, PR emails every day of the week. And for whatever reason, this one, I just decided to open up and actually read it. So it's about this guy who received like this Centene Award or something of that nature for just excellent service, whatever. You know, email that literally we just throw in the trash, which is great. I'm not saying his accomplishment is wrong, but it's like, this is just nothing we can, it's not newsworthy. Yes. So I ended up reading it. I'm like, oh, this is great. Like he literally worked in the Chaffetz Arena at the time during the Blues games in Section 107. He was a guy that everybody just knew. You know, you're in Section 107. He is somebody that you can depend on. He's going to take you to your seat. He's going to make sure you're good. A young Black, not a young Black man, but an older Black man from Belleville. But he also suffers from, you know, a condition that he can't stand on his feet too long. You know, so he pretty much, you know, is hurting. His body is hurting all day long. Yeah. So while he's up moving around, helping people out, it was CP, cerebral palsy.
Okay.
And he literally couldn't stand. He was supposed to be standing up, but he was. And he came to work every single day with the mindset that, you know what, I'm going to get it done. So ended up hitting him up, hitting up a photographer who I knew could just help me tell the story in the best way. He loved the story. We ended up shooting the story on our own time. And yeah. The story ended up becoming great, and I thought it was something great to put on TV, but people didn't. So, so it was, you know, it was what it was. And I'm like, you know what? How about I was going out of town, overseas again.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I still need to have engagement on my Facebook page while I'm gone. I'm going to put this on my Facebook page. So I put it on my Facebook page, which then made it eligible. Like I told you. And then I ended up submitting that in next year's Emmy. And I knew it was a great story, but I mean, honestly, with that stuff, you just never know. I mean, in one category, you can have anywhere from 5 entries to 25 to 30 entries. So I'm just one story in a group of hellas, you know? So you look at like the submission list and it's like, ah, oh, dang. I guess we'll see.
Right.
But when it came back, like I literally was like shaking, like, what you mean I'm nominated for like an Emmy Award? Like, that's crazy. But it meant so much because once again, it didn't air, you know, it was blocked. So the fact that it got nominated to me, like that was enough. I mean, that's accomplishment within itself, but of course I wanted to win.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I was super nervous. It was at this point, it was an in-person, ceremony. And around that time, actually, I was releasing my book. That was going on. I was releasing my book. So money was tight because I self-published my book. So I'm like, going down to Springfield, Missouri, I could roll with like one of my coworkers. I could hop on a call with her to go down there, but then I would have to pay, I think it was like $250 for like the hotel room. You know, I got to throw them at least about $50 on gas. That's about $300. I could be putting that towards something dealing with my book, child. You know what I'm saying? I could be trying to get this actual book signing together. Like, that's a lot of money going to a what if.
Right.
And God looked out again. God is amazing, right?
Listen,
literally, it was being streamed. So got on the, like, literally, I was out working out, I think I was. Hopped on the stream at the perfect time. They were literally announcing my award at that point in time. Mind you, it is hella's awards I got to go through. And I could have just had to sit there and just listen to them just go through these awards, literally got on there as soon as they was announcing mine, found out I didn't want, closed that out and went to have a drink. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, keep it moving.
Know my day. Like, blood pressure was sky high and then came down. And then the second one was when the Blues won the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
We did like a live show of like the parade and we submitted that in, which ended up getting nominated and actually got nominated around this, I got like a memory on Facebook. It was nominated literally, I think to this day,
crazy.
Like last year, I got nominated for that Emmy. Eventually we did not win, but yeah, so, but
it's
that was
coming. Serious. The win is coming.
It's coming.
A win is coming. Listen, man, I am trying. You know what I'm saying? I am trying. Like, they keep playing me. So we go see what's going on. I was looking like J. Cole when he lost the first Grammy, you know?
Oh yeah. And, like, it's just something to put in your second book. That's all that is.
Mm-hmm. Man, listen, that next one is going to be something, but it's going to be a while because that first one was process.
And so speaking of the book, Can you just get a listen a little bit more about the book? And what was your inspiration behind writing it, self-publishing it, funding it all yourself? Why did you, what did you want people to get from your story?
In the most simplest form that you can make it. You can make it. And here's the book right here too. I have a copy. There we go.
Come on,
come out, do I too, how dare you. honestly, the process of even writing this book, I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I just had it on my heart that I had something to tell. Like I had a story in me and I wanted to write. So I don't know what day it was, but it was definitely in like 2018. I think it was like April or maybe May or something. I just started writing. I wrote like the first three chapters back in 2018. Yeah. And I didn't know what I was writing. I just started just writing a story. And I sent it over to one of my friends, Micah, up in New York. And I was like, I don't know what I'm writing. I'm writing something. So just kind of, you know, guide me to where I'm writing. And I sent it over to her. And she read it and she was like, I like it. I love where you're going with it. Mm-hmm. It's giving me memoir. And I knew what a memoir was. I mean, you hear about memoirs.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the top searches on actually Google when it comes to memoir is what is a memoir? So, you know, I was like, yeah. So I went to Google and I was like, what is a memoir? And you go into it and let me tell you, it's like, oh, it's deep. It's a reflection. And I said, no, we're not doing that. That's not what I was going for.
Yeah.
This is not trying to be something where I was trying to like release anything. This is just something I was just, I don't know what I was talking about. So I literally put the book down. I didn't touch it again. It was just on my desktop. I didn't touch it again until that following year, that following June. Mm-hmm. It was just placed on my heart, like, finish it. I don't know what it was, but it was like, finish it. So I was on the morning show at the time. So literally in between my live shots, because I was live from like 4:30 a.m. to like 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And in between, I'll do a live shot. I'll get out, you know, Darion Henderson, Fox News. I'll run back in the truck and I just started just going. I just start typing. And literally, you know, three chapters ended up becoming five ended up becoming six, seven. And it just kept going. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna have a reflection chapter with like my parents, you know, and went back. And like, that was, it was deep. Like, honestly, it just got to a point where it was like, whoa, it was a release. You know, we don't realize, I think, how much we have bottled up inside ourselves that we think is just normal in some type of way, but it's like, we need to release that, you know, like that's where true acceptance come from. Like that's true growth. That's true, you know, living in your truth, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
And I had to get to that point, you know, like there's literally like my mom and dad chapter in the book, I would never read again. Never. Honestly, when I wrote it, I didn't even reread those chapters at all. I just let the editor read them. And I was like, you say, you know, those two chapters are fine and cool. And I reread the book multiple times and would not read those two chapters because they were just so transparent.
Yeah.
They were just so transparent. And it was so much I had to get off my chest, specifically surrounding my father and his untimely death when I was, you know, young, that, yeah, I just didn't want to relive, but I didn't know that I needed to go through that therapy within myself to just get that out. So that's pretty much kind of what the book was for me. You know, it was a big reflection, but it was also showing people that, you know, going through that story I was telling you about, you know, because it starts off literally at the point where I was getting Teach for America. So it starts at November 2016. Not 2016, I was already in the industry, November 2014.
Okay.
It starts off with me, you know, getting Teach for America and those feelings. One of my best friends at that time, when I told him I got him, he was not impressed. Jeremiah, he was not impressed at all. And I talk about that in the book because that was also a reflection for me too. Like, I didn't realize that, you know, that wasn't only just, it wasn't him hating. And I didn't think he was hating at the time. He was very, you know, he would congratulate me for it, but I just felt like it wasn't it. He knew I could be better than what I was putting myself in. So that's pretty much what the book goes over. And it goes over, you know, those mishaps, like I was telling you, during my internship, you know, them not wanting me to go out to, you know, be in front of the camera and how I have to use that. It goes over, you know, me going through those motions of, you know, trying to find a job, waking up early, reaching out to news directors. It goes over that drive home with me crying, things of that nature. But then it also goes over the triumph of me actually getting the job and the emotions that came into that. And those first 2 years of my career, it stops literally with me finally getting that job at Fox 2. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a full circle moment is what the book covers. And when I was writing the memoir, after I got done more so, and I was telling people that I was writing a memoir, you know, you kind of get these looks, right? Like 20 some odd years old, like, who are you to write a memoir? And I wasn't going for that.
Right.
Like, I wasn't going for it because, you know, when it comes to writing a memoir, you don't have to be some 40, 50, 60 year old reflecting over the last 40, 50, 60 years of your life. Exactly. You know, you can be that. But for me, it was like, why would I hold off on this story for 50, 60 years when I can impact somebody right now? I can tell you the story right now and help you along the way. What good? And mind you, your books are great. You know, I read both Obama and, you know, Michelle's book. But what good would that have been for my mother, you know, back then? Yeah. Like those minds that you can just tap into at that moment instead of waiting until you're at this unattainable level, this or self-perceived unattainable level, where it's like, oh, you got the president. So of course, all this stuff happened to be, yeah, you know, like in the beginning. But like, what does that mean for me right now? I'm now 40, 50 years old, you know, and I'm working a job I don't want to work.
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't want to hold on. It was, and I forgot the quote that somebody told me, but or where I got it from, but maybe it was like a TD Jakes video on like social media or something. I don't know where it was. But it was specifically, it said something of the nature of, you know, we hold on to stories that are no longer ours. And that's what I realized about my story. It was no longer mine to keep within myself. It was for me to tell for somebody else to learn from. You know, like, why am I holding on to this story about what happened to me? I've already been impressed by it. I'm already inspired by it. Mm-hmm. I could tell you and inspire you. Yeah. You know, it's no longer my story to hold on to. It's a story for you to be inspired by. So here.
I like that phrase so much.
That's a bar.
And you are a true storyteller, I'm sure, as you know. So I can only imagine how great the book is. It's definitely made me want to read it even more.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. And we have an invited podcast book list that will definitely be added to that.
Thank you.
But aside from all of your endeavors and the book, you also have a media consulting company. So talk to us, you know, a little bit about Speak.
Yeah. So that was honestly something that I was doing around the time of the book. Okay. So I was like, you know what, you know, as I start this book, I also want to start a media consulting company. You know, why not? You know, like, people need to know exactly what it means to, one, publish a book. And then also media training. You know, people in St. Louis definitely always want to know, how can I get on TV? How can I get on TV?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were contacting me after I released the book. How did you do this? Who did you publish through? So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to come up with a company for it. You know, I mean, the easy term would be it was a tax write-off. But another term would be, you know, I was trying to inspire some people as well. Yes. So that's kind of where it came from. Ended up working with my cousin a lot. He was opening up a bar, Open Concept, in St. Louis.
I've heard of it. That's a vibe.
Okay. Yeah, listen. I've had plenty many of spirited nights in come that on. Place. But so, you know, it grew around that time. You know, I literally was like, you know what, as I'm releasing this book, why not start a company as well? So I decided to just kind of put both of them together and just release all that at the same time. And I'm still on like a good trek with it all. But of course, COVID just threw a wrench in everything. I was going to go on a whole book tour.
Yeah.
I was scheduling stuff out in LA. I was about to get down to like UAPB. My school had opened up a budget for some books. So, man, it was just like, I just kind of, yeah, it hit me in the gut. I actually had did only one speaking engagement outside of like the book signing at Lindenwood University. Mm-hmm. No, not Lindenwood, Fountain University.
Okay.
St. Louis.
Yeah.
Did a speaking engagement there and spoke to some students who was just, you know, simply inspired just to hear the speech. And they ended up getting a book purchased by Fountain or whatever, like a set of books that I ended up signing for them and things of that nature. So it was really good. It was really good.
Yeah,
that's pretty legit. And like you said, like you've done all these things, your own company, book, mm-hmm. speaking engagements, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure people see you in a certain light. Do you feel like you always have to be on at all times? Like the Darion that's on TV, do you have to be that person? Or is there like a public perception that you have to maintain it like all times? Do you feel like that way at all?
I think there's a standard,
yeah,
but I'm not good with boxes. But don't put me in no damn box. You know what I mean? And I've gotten to a place of comfort enough to the point where it's like, you know, who I am on TV is who I am in person. And that's why people appreciate me. Yeah. So I get what you're saying. Like, because a lot of people, not a lot of people, but a good majority of people who are on TV, their persona on TV is not them in person. Right. You know, I mean, I even had people like hit me up like, like, tell me like you're like TV voice. My TV voice is this here right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it comes with a little bit more, you know, enunciation. You know what I mean? Like, you know, good morning, I'm Darion Henderson. Maybe that. But, like, I'm not out here, like, with a whole nother voice. Used to, like, people say, like, they see this, like, TikTok stuff. And I ain't trying to say, oh, but they see the TikTok stuff. You know what I mean? And, like, anchors on there, like, trying to make it seem like you just have this totally different voice. But that's literally like a media misconception, like, you know, that there's like this other voice that we go to be this person who we're not. And that ain't it. Like, that's just not me. So, you know, for my peoples too, it was almost like surreal because I'll be on TV and I get down with my live shot and they'll FaceTime me like, hey, what we on tonight? I'm like, what it do? You know what I mean? Because you can just make that like transition because it's not really a big transition that I'm making. Yeah. But when you're not yourself, then you have to keep up this persona, but I ain't got time for that. Like I don't got time for that. Like that takes work, that takes effort.
Yeah.
And it's just so much easier just to be my damn self than it is to be something that I'm not. So I'd rather just be myself that to the point where what you see on TV is what you get in person. And people love that cohesiveness and that transparency. And that's what makes you, I think, a believable journalist, you know, a trusted journalist is that, you know, the person that I just saw on my 5 o'clock news is the same person I'm seeing getting this gas.
Exactly.
You know, like that's who I am. I'm not, you know, I don't buy into that stuff. And I think a majority of it is that because of my journey, you know, like I didn't go the not the easy route, but like the route that literally just like takes you the expressway to this place. You know,
right.
I didn't go through that. Like I have to work for every step of the way. So who am I to get to this point? I'm like, I'm not doing your podcast. Like, I need some money. Like, you know, like, what? Like, who are you? Like, I just don't get it. Like, and it still like baffles me. But you know, I let people live their lives because, you know, once again, when you're, I'm not saying they're not living for themselves, but when you're living for other people's perception, you have to do that. But I don't subscribe to that stuff at all.
Authenticity, I love it.
Yes, it's number one.
And so kind of speaking of being on, this is a really small side question. Does the news station cover your costs of like looking TV ready? Do they cover your like haircut, facials, anything else?
You're getting into my contract, child. You got to slow down. You're getting... that's confidential.
Okay.
Stuff. You have my coworkers looking at this stuff like, run me.
You get what?
Okay. I can speak about in general.
In general.
In general, very much a disclaimer. This does not mean if anybody's watching that I have this in my contract because none of the business, no way. But yes, you can get all that. So you can get whatever the hell you want in contracts. You know, if they want you enough, you can get whatever you want. And I mean, haircuts, dry cleaning, anything. Like we have a conference, NABJ conference, National Association of Black Journalists.
Yes.
It'd be Liddy in the city and everybody on TV is there. So it's a very beautiful conference, very beautiful people, black people, just, you know, but everybody literally from the people who, you know, just starting off in the industry, all the way up to like Charles Barkley. I got a picture with Charles Barkley, literally at the conference down in New Orleans. You know, Robin Roberts is like sitting down, you know, at the cocktail table getting happy hour. And it's like, you know, it's crazy. Like, you know, but that's the conference. You can get that in your budget. You know, you can negotiate that. So essentially, when it comes to like TV contracts, essentially, I'm almost like a basketball player, a football player. Like literally, like you can get whatever you want in them contracts as long as you negotiate it, and as long as that's what they want to go for. So yeah, you can get everything. You can get clothing allowances where, you know, you get a certain amount of money you can spend every month because it does get expensive. Now, a lot of those things, I will be honest with you, you get more on the larger markets.
Yeah,
you know, but you can get some stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, generally speaking.
You can supplement some costs, you know.
Make something happen.
And so we actually recently, so there's been a pattern. Every time we have a guest in a certain industry, we have a bunch of them in a row. So we just had husband and wife. They work for NBC and MSNBC. They kind of gave us some advice for our listeners who want to work behind the scenes. But since you are in front of the camera, is there one piece of advice that someone needs to know if they want to work in front of the camera?
That's big, because like I said, it's all a finesse.
Yes.
It's all a finesse. And it's so hard, honestly, because, you know, being Black, like, you know, like I left that piece out in the beginning, but literally when I was applying for some jobs, I would go to like, cause every news station has like a list of like profiles on it. I'd go to the profile, and if it was another Black man there, I wouldn't apply for it because I wasn't going to get it.
Quota met.
I'm not going to get it. Like, you already have one. You're not going to have two. And if you go to a lot of news stations, if you go look at their bios, you'll be hard-pressed.
Yeah.
Unless it's, like, in a real Black community. Mm-hmm. You'll be hard, like Atlanta or something of that nature, or Baton Rouge or maybe New Orleans. You'll be hard-pressed to find two, if not three, Black men there. And if not, maybe two out of the three is probably somewhere in sports, mm-hmm. and one is in news, you know? So that's like a hard part of it. But that's interesting because I mentor a few people, just helped a guy get a job actually in Huntsville, Alabama, by completely redid his whole reel, and he ended up getting a job. So that's an interesting question. I really don't know. I think the biggest thing is like, you know, you just gotta always know all you need is one yes, you know? And if you believe it in your heart, your hearts of hearts that, you know, this is the industry that you want to be in, then go for it, you know? But I think also the biggest thing too, I guess if I can get like two parts, is reach out to somebody, you know? Like, I'm a phone call away. You can reach out to me if you're watching and you're trying to get into the industry. Like, I'm not somebody that's not gonna not read your email, because there's people in this industry like that too, trust me, you know? It's like, you know, like, here come my card, reach out. And then you just never get an email. It's like, I know you saw my email. Stop playing with me. So I would say, you know, reach out and get a mentor. And a mentor will help you, because there's levels to this. Mm-hmm. It's levels. And there's ways to talk when you finally get somebody who bites on you potentially coming to the station. So I think the biggest thing is like finding a mentor, and knowing in your hearts of hearts that literally all you need is one yes. One yes, that's all you need, you know? And that's it. That's it, honestly. Because it's something that, because it's so subjective. Like, and that's why it's so hard, because what one news director, like, I don't too much care for, another one would love.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, and it's all about, like, you being what they're looking for in that moment, you know? Because just because an anchor position is open doesn't mean they're looking for a male anchor, better yet, a Black male anchor.
Yeah.
So it's just real subjective. So I think the best way is just, you know, getting into this industry, finding you a mentor, and hitting the ground running with that, you know. But I would definitely say just hard work, though. Hard work is going to get you through all of this.
Yeah.
It's going to keep you going. And it's going to, because once you get in and you're good at what you do, you're a hot commodity. Don't let it be lost. And I said, I've never applied for another job since I've been in.
Come on.
Because once you get in and you working hard, you getting it done as a Black male in this industry. I told you, it's not a lot. So when it is, when they got the good one, everybody want them. You know what I mean? So like, it's not too hard to make your moves because you're the hot commodity. Yeah. But realize it's not a lot of us. So a lot of us are weeded out immediately. You know, we don't get the luxury of being mediocre.
Right.
And being a hot commodity, I see how you got that haircut budget. It's always fresh, man. I feel you. Every 2 days, nice haircut.
I appreciate it, but you got to keep the fresh fade now. You know what I mean?
Hey, got to. Like,
you can't be out here, you know, looking scuffed up. You got to keep the fresh fade in front of the people. And like, and even at my station now, I believe I'm the first Black male anchor there. I believe I am. But this station is super young, though. So it started in like 2008. Yeah, it started in 2008. I believe I'm the first Black male, definitely main anchor there. So, I have an image to keep up around here.
Yeah.
You know? Once you are on TV, past the image of like my face, I have little kids watching me. You know, that what really, you know, like tucks on my heartstrings, honestly, is knowing that the little kids are watching. You know, remember even in my first market, like, you know, dirt cheap, like the
look. Yeah.
Yeah. So down in my first job, Cape Girardeau, I was literally getting out. I think it was like homecoming or something. I was going in to give me a little bottle, you know, and this man was sitting in his car. He ended up getting out of his car. He was like, oh, Jerry Anderson from KFES. I'm like, oh, yeah, what's up, buddy? You know, gamer, you know.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let my hand go. So he was really holding on to it and was holding strong. And he was like, bro, he looked at me dead in my eye. He was like, thank you so much, man. Like, thank you for what you do. He was like, you know, my kids get so excited when they see you on TV. You know, he was like, they just be like, there you go, there you go. And I'm like, dude, I'm trying to get this. You know what I'm saying? You better have me out here, you know, emotional. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No, I don't even want to get this liquor no more because I got an image to hold up. But nah, but like, it's situations like that where it's like, you know what? I got to keep going because past the adults being happy that they're getting their news from somebody that they know, it's the little kids who are now looking at me and realizing that, you know, even if they don't want to get the news, I could be anything I want to be out in this damn world, you know, because I'm looking at a Black man who looks just like me. Once again, I'm darker than your dark friend. So it's not like, you know, not saying, you know, light skin, Black people ain't it. I'm just saying they're way more accepted in this industry to where it's something where you see all the time. But when you have someone that's dark, you know, it just means a lot. It means so much because I take a lot, no lie. Like, you know, when it comes to me being in the studio, I need some extra lights, you know? So that takes you also opening up the budget a little bit more if you want me to sit on your desk. Like, you know, and I'm very unapologetic about that too. Like, I need some love. Sign me up. Give me my angels, I call it. You know, give me my halo. But, you know, that takes a lot as well. But it's about like the kids too, man. I forgot about that, but it's all about the kids and inspiring them because you got to inspire the next generation. So if I can do that, you know, just by telling the news and being there and being present, that's why I make sure when that red light on, I'm on.
Yeah.
I'm on because I have to be. I have to be.
Well, thank you for sharing that story because I know that was some fuel to just, you know, keep you going, keep you wanting to just do this and stay in this work.
That's why kids, like, you invite me to a school, 9 times out of 10, I'm, let's get it. I have to go because it's another thing too, is seeing in person, you know, I can sit and watch you on TV every day of the week, but then once again, you're still like that figure that it's not realistic, you know? So when I finally see someone like that in person, it's like, oh, he's real, you know, and he's in front of me, you know? And like, excuse me, I haven't been out here to like kids in here school now, but y'all know all the stuff going on, virtual.
Right.
In school, not in school, better yet having guests come in to talk to the kids.
Yeah.
But in St. Louis, I would go to a school, my fifth grade teacher's classroom every single year. Oh. And the kids literally, I saw you this morning. Like they're waking up, their parents are watching. So they looking at me too. So, you know, that just, it just means a lot. It means a lot, which was so hard for me to leave St. Louis knowing all of that. But, you know, once again, you got to live inwardly as well. So
exactly.
And so we're coming to the home stretch of the interview. We just want to hit you with a few quick questions. Mm-hmm. This would be for the guests to get to know you a little bit better personally and just get some little Darion, you know. So we're going to hit you with a few quick questions. Just hit us with a few first thing to come to your mind, and then we can keep it rolling. But huge traveler, we've heard, like you mentioned a couple times, been overseas several times. So yes. What's your favorite place that you've been to? And what's on the top of your list for places you haven't been to yet?
Ooh, that's interesting. Damn. Brody!
It's kind of hard.
Oh, man, because I was going out the country every single year for this pandemic. This pandemic was something else, man.
Man.
But favorite place, my favorite place overseas is Prague. Prague, Czech Republic. Like, Liddy in the city. Do you hear me? Like, and it's so old. Like, all the places over in Europe is really old, very cultured. But, man, love Prague. Prague is the most lit, I'll say. Prague is the most lit. London is the most, like, bougie. And if I never have to go to Paris again, I won't. So, yeah.
Okay. Really?
Huh. I've never heard that take before.
Go to Paris, go see the Eiffel Tower, go home. Like, it's just, it's shady, it's dirty.
Oh.
Trust me. If you talk to anybody who's been to Paris, it's the same story I'm telling you. It is not it. But definitely Prague, Czech Republic. London is my fave, and I love Germany. I love Germany. So Berlin and, Amsterdam was lit, too. I saw the Drake concert in Amsterdam.
I hear good things about Amsterdam, but that's a hell of a concert right there.
Yeah, man. Like, the one we had, like, the Lamborghini all in the air, something of that nature. Like, yeah, we were over there in Amsterdam. Like, it's simply amazing. So if you have not been overseas, go over there. Like, literally, it's America without the rules, which is glorious. But everybody over there chill, man. Like, it's not as, like, uptight as it is over here, you know? Like, not to go down that road, but, like, also, like, sex is not, it's something that's taboo over there.
Yeah.
Which you may think, like, okay, not like I said, not to go down that road, but when sex is not taboo, everyone can just let their hair down and just chill, you know? Like, because, like, Amsterdam, for instance, you know, the red light district and things of that nature, like, it's just a cool place to be, you know, marijuana legal, things of that nature. Like, it's just, everybody just got their hair laid down. Like, they riding bikes around the city. They don't even have cars over here. Like, you know, they chilling in the park, you know, laying down with music, dancing. Like, they were just, it was life over there, you know? Like, they were, like, over there, I'm like, y'all are living. Like, over, you know, St. Louis, we, you know, we're in cell phones, we're on social media. Over there, they was just chilling.
Like, it's vibing.
Bro, you have to go. If you have not been, and any viewer out there who have never been overseas, you have to go. You will love it. You'll go every year like I have.
And so what's next on your list? What's at the top of your list that you haven't
place
you haven't been?
Oh, man. I actually wanted to go to Africa before I turned 30. I don't see that happening. But I'm going to blame it on the pandemic. I actually was a pandemic, but I definitely want to get to Africa. I want to go to South Africa. I want to see what their life be like because I heard that is simply amazing too. So Africa is, I don't know if it's next, but now I guess I can push it back. At least by 35, I want to be in Africa for the first time.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
I've heard that.
By the Lord's grace.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to add what you just talked to us about to my travel list.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm telling you, Prague is lit. Anyway, Nikki, you know what I'm saying? Y'all can't even spell Prague. When she did that, I was like over there. So I'm like, oh, crap. Like, I'm going to go to Prague. And she was real. Prague is lit.
Lit. You have say less. It.
Get that passport, you know?
Yes. And so, Darian, if you had to choose to live 100 years in the future, or 100 years in the past, which one are we going with?
100 years in the future, 100 years in the past. I think being Black in America, the 100 years in the future.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
Let's not go back to that point, child. Let's not do that. But definitely 100 years in the future, because we're on a great trajectory right now. I mean, I know all of the, you know, issues are still happening, police brutality and things of that nature, but this next generation, I think, is the generation not to get rid of it, because I feel like you're always going to have that. Like, just as much as we have progression, we also have children of the insurrectionists who were in DC. Like, be mindful. These people have kids who are listening to this stuff, who are believing these things. So there's going to be a next generation of those people too. Like, don't get that wrong. But I think there's going to be so much more of progression than it's going to be as of right now, because we're still holding on to those baby boomers who are still in Congress, still running things, which is like, it's we're kind of in that thing where it's like, I mean, I'm not too good on cars, but it's like, you're trying to accelerate, but your car just got this pushback. It's like this pushback, you know? And like, it's like, in my personal opinion, you know, not related to me being on TV, I think it's a lot of like the baby boomers that are holding onto that emergency brake as we're trying to full accelerate ourselves into the future. And that's where we're at.
That's the perfect way to say that. Wow. Yeah.
She's like, you're right.
Like, oh my gosh.
And so we've heard you're like a big wine person, right?
Man. How you brought it out?
Listen. We do this. Okay. We do this. But all right. So I need to know what you're going to drink on this occasion. So you just won your first Emmy and you have a New York Times bestseller. Ooh. You're at a steakhouse with all your close friends and family celebrating. What type of wine are you drinking on this occasion, on this evening, this wonderful evening?
I don't even think I know the name of it, but listen, it better have at least, you know, a comma next to it. You feel me? I need the I need all of that.
Yes.
I need your finest. You feel me?
Bring it out. I need your finest.
And I won't want to go home with too. You know, like that's yes. But for right now, give me my 19 crimes.
Bet.
Okay. So what about sitting in the house Saturday or Sunday afternoon watching TV? What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? 19 crimes.
Same. He said, look.
All across the board.
It don't matter.
19, right now is 19 crimes. Now, you know, bestseller, you know, anchor on CNN, put a comma next to it. But for right now, we're looking at that $9.99. So,
I'm mad at it.
But it's good, though. I got a high alcohol content. This is not an endorsement of 19 grams. But it's good. Let me tell you, you better get that red. I'm just, like, it got a sweet red. Like, Snoop Dogg, too, got, like, a nice one, too. But sweet red. But try it out. I'm telling you, it's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, Darian, if you could interview anyone living or someone who has passed, who would you be interviewing and why?
That's interesting. Anybody?
Anybody.
Oof.
I know. That's hard to pick.
That's a hard one. It's like, what do I want to talk about? You know?
Yeah.
Jesus. I really don't know. You said living and dating.
I know. So it's that's like too many options.
Yeah, there's just too many options of just people that's just so inspiring, you know?
Or who would you start with? Say you could interview them all.
Yeah, it's a series. You have a series of people you interview. Who's going to be the first one?
That's even hard within itself, man. Like, because I mean, some of the names that naturally goes off, you know, I have a little bit of a fascination with like Malcolm X. So I would love to interview Malcolm X to really like, you know, I hate the pick your brain quote, but like, I would love to just get into his mind.
Yeah.
And see how can he believe that we can get to like the next 100 years. I would love to speak to my ancestors. You know, I would love to speak to literally people whose name I do not know, like, you know, like family members who I just have no knowledge of whatsoever, but are the reason why I'm here today. Mostly them, you know, to understand like what it was like back then for them to just refuel myself going like forward, you know? And I think that would be like, for real, the most fulfilling for me. I know you think of like, you know, I don't know, big names, and you want to say like these big celebrities who I don't know, but I think if anything shows us nowadays that, you know, we can't glorify these people, is nowadays when we have access to their everyday thoughts and you realize that I'd rather you just sing than tell me how you feel, you know? Not saying you need to stay in your lane, but like at the same time, it's like, you know what? This is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, but I love your music though. So I think for me, the biggest one would be like my ancestors, you know, in passing, just my ancestors, my grandmother. I would love to speak to her again. just to keep me going, just to keep me inspired, because that's the reason why I'm here today. And that's the reason why even this initial inspiration that I have is the reason why it's here. So, I mean, it'd be great to speak to like some celebrities, you know, but I'd rather speak to people who got me to where I'm at right here today, which is the blood that still flows within me.
Yes.
That's beautiful. That makes sense. And like this whole interview has been about growth and coming full circle. Yeah. And pushing forward. So like, what's next for Darion? How do you see yourself growing the next few years? You always said you're growing. So how are we going to grow in the next few years? Where do you see yourself?
Ah, man, where I see myself as far as location, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know where the location would be at, but I know it will be at a place to where I'm not only happy externally, but also internally as well. I see myself still, because my goals are switching. You know, I used to be like, I want to go be on MSNBC and da, 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 da. And nowadays it's like, you know, I'd rather stay local, make my little money, you know what I mean? And live a more fulfilling lifestyle than to be on this rat race, mm-hmm. trying to get to somewhere and feel as if I have to keep attaining this certain level, you know? And it's like, no, like that's not life. Life is when you're at a place of enjoyment. You happy, your fam happy, you're eating good. So I don't know where the location is going to be at, but I know it's going to be a place to where I'm still within the full happiness of who I am. So, and that's everywhere I want to be.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And so we're going to hit you with two more.
Okay. But
people have been hearing a lot about you, and I'm sure they want to continue to hear more about you moving forward. Mm-hmm. So where can people follow you? How can people get in touch? And where can people buy the book at?
Yeah, so you can get in touch with me. I'm on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. On Facebook, it's Darion Henderson. On IG, on Twitter, it's Darion LH. So you can find me all over there. You know, I do follow back. You have good content. Okay. I gotta unfollow you, buddy. But my book can be found on my website, DarionHenderson.com.
Yes.
And then also, you can also find it on Amazon. It's on Amazon as well. And I believe it's on Amazon Prime too. So you can get it in like 2 days. So it'll be at your crib and bam, you know, I get my little percentage of it and we Gucci. But if you want me to sign it, you have to go to DarionHenderson.com. I'll order it, sign off on it, and then I'll get it in the mail and get it out to you. So yeah, it's probably the best methods. But if you also want to reach out to my email is Darion, my first name, DERRION.Henderson@WMBFnews.com. That's my work email. My personal is d.henderson314@gmail.com. Either one works. Trust me, I will respond to it. Personal more so than honestly professional, because there's so many emails that run through there. So yeah, just send me over an email. And within that, I want to get my number out just to everybody, but within that, I'll definitely give you my number. We can schedule a time honestly to me, because I'm more so of a, I'd rather talk to you on the phone and give you the game rather than sit back here and go back and forth with an email, because I'm not going to be typing all day, John.
I feel that.
I ain't doing it.
So Darion, we typically end our interviews with like a piece of advice, but you've already kind of given us a whole bunch throughout. So I'm really, really interested in what are the top three traits that you possess that you feel like has helped you to be so successful on your journey?
The top three traits, strength is one of them.
Okay.
You know, you gotta be ready to carry that load, carry the load of the world being on you, carry the load of literally a wall being up in front of you. And what are you gonna do? You know, what are you gonna do? So you gotta have that strength just to pull through. Resilient, because while that wall is up, there's also gonna be people, you know, punching you in the gut, punching you in the face, you know, kidding you all over, you know, like you being, you know, hitting you all over, like you're preparing for a boxing match. Yeah. I'll take it to the fraternity. Anyway, you know, hitting you all over, you know. We are not a hazy organization. Anyway, getting you all over and things of that nature, you know what I mean? As you're trying to like go forward in your life. So definitely resilience and patience. Mm. Patience. And that's key.
Yeah.
That is so key. That is so key. If anything showed me, if God showed me anything, it's patience. Be patient, my child. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm an Aries, so I'm naturally like, I got to be all over this. This is mine. This is my stuff. And he showed me in so many instances where it's like, move,
yeah.
You know, move out the way and move out of your own way. And understand that growth comes with patience. You know, we scream growth and we want growth and know your worth and things of that nature, but you also have to realize that that also comes with patience. Yeah. And realize that through also while you're waiting, you also need to be growing. Because as you're screaming about your worth, you need to make sure that you are worth your worth at the same time. So patience and realizing that, you know, you are wherever you are right now for a reason. You know, never would imagine. You would have told me this time last year I had a job, but you would have told me June of last year that I would be in Myrtle Beach right now. I'm like, you tripping. I ain't going there. But patience, resilience, strength. That literally is why I'm here right now, is you know, just going where I'm supposed to be. And since I've been out here, I personally have helped so many people. You know, I've been personally, from their words, such a blessing to them. And I've, you know, just poured myself so much into people out here to get them to their next step. Because, and I realized, damn, like, I'm literally here for a reason. Like, this is why I'm here. It's to not only grow within myself, but it was to let you know, too, that you better get your work, too. Because if somebody would have told me at my first job that I should have been doing this, then I could be somewhere else. I don't even know, but I'm where I'm supposed to be. So, yeah, patience is key. So keep that.
Sure. And Darion, we really appreciate the time. I'm sure all of our listeners loved it. And I know I definitely did. We're all ready for our own come up.
Yes.
So we really appreciate it. And that's another episode of the Invited Podcast in the books. We'll talk to y'all again next week.
That's
right. But hey, appreciate you, man.
Darion.
Thank you.
Your energy, literally. I've had the longest day. That was such I really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. No, it was great talking to y'all too. Y'all was definitely prepared.
Yeah, gotta be.
Y'all went to levels, and I'm like, how y'all know about that? Oh, how y'all know about the wine? DJ told you about it?
No, it was in your the article you sent over, your news station bio.
For real? I don't know what you writing in that thing. I guess so, huh?
Yeah, so you love going to wineries, traveling. You ran a half marathon.
We had a lot of things we didn't even get to get to, but yes, we definitely, you know, try to do our research and everything.
Yeah. I feel it. Well, y'all were literally amazing to talk to. Let me know whenever y'all want me to come back, or y'all need somebody else too, because this industry is small. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so we release episodes every Thursday. So yours will come out November 11th. So we'll hit you like the week of, just to remind you, it's coming out that Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then your social media has plenty of nice pictures. But if you have a preferred picture you would like us to use, feel free to shoot it over to us and we'll use that. We'll tag in everything. Feel free to repost all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And it'll be on anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever. And the video will be on YouTube too. So send it to all your peoples.
Yeah.
Well, let's get it, man. I